to relate the cosmology of character arises to string theory and endomorphic geometry. And in general, in some previous work done with Quang Pan and Quang Donati Campbell, it also provides a physical derivation and also some generalization.
You could mind putting on the microphone that's right behind your iPad then?
Is this better? No.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so we'll see. It provides a physical derivation, also generalization of conjectures of Hausdorff, Moghalb, and Wang, and Schender, Truman, and Zaslow. So what is this about? So first, because we already heard about wild character varieties yesterday in Philip's talk, so I'm just going to go over that really quickly. So the setup, the geometric setup, is a smooth projective curve C with a marked point P. We pick Q, an irregular type at P, with values in the standard Cartan of GLR C. So if you pick up a coordinate Z at P, then Q looks like written there. It's a Laurent tail. And then we also pick basically a residue, which is going to be a diagonal matrix again. It's an R by R diagonal matrix. And then we want to, as in yesterday's talk, we want to look at flat GLR connections on C on the punctured curve, which are locally gauge equivalent to something like this. I'm sorry, I'm missing a dz there, as you can see. It's dq plus rdz over z plus holomorphic terms at P. And more specifically, what I want to think about is the variety of Stokes data, as again, something that we saw in Philip's talk yesterday, which was rigorously constructed by Philip by quasi-Hamiltonian reduction. It also appeared in Witten's work on wildly ramified geometric Langrands from gauge theory. So this turns out to be, for sufficiently generic R, this turns out to be a smooth quasi-projective variety of some dimension that's written there. The important thing is that the dimension depends only on the partition nu determined by the eigenvalues of R, or better said, by the multiplicities of eigenvalues of, and the order n of the pole at P. All right, so these are our wild character varieties, and as in what we want to study is the mixed Poincaré polynomial of these varieties, defined relative to the using the weight filtration and cohomology constructed by Delin many years ago. And so that's the goal. I mean, that's where I'm heading with this. And we're going to do this. We're going to try to study this, to derive explicit formulas for this polynomials using string theory and magnitude geometry. But before I get into that, I want to mention a few things that will be very useful along the way. So first of all, there is this result called the wild non-abelian Hall correspondence proved by Ricard and Bolch, and also by Mochizuki, which relates irregular flat connections, as we just saw, to irregular Higgs bundles on the same curve. According to a certain rules. I mean, if you ignoring the details for now, at least, what you can say is that if you set up the problem right, you get two moduli spaces which are different as algebraic complex algebraic varieties, but they end up being the same as C infinity manifolds, and actually they are actually related by hypercurrent rotation. The two complex structures are related by hypercurrent rotation. And furthermore, in the same setup, we have this the P equals W conjecture correspondence, which is formulated by Cataldo, Hausel, and Migliorini, which states that once you identify the moduli spaces like this by hypercurrent rotations, you may wonder what happens to the filtration, the weight filtration and cohomology on the character variety, and that ends up corresponding to a perverse Leray filtration on the Higgs bundle side, which is constructed using the Hitchin map to the integrable structure, to the affine base. So this is going to all become very important, and it's going to kind of fit all these building blocks. We're going to fit into string theory a bit later. So I'm going over this a little bit fast because I want to get to the details make sure I have enough time to go over the details. So now, what is known about this? So there's a recent paper, recent result of Tamash, so it's Hauser, Moreb, and Wong, where these polynomials are actually, well, for the mixed Poincaré polynomial, it's a conjecture. For the E polynomial, it's a theorem. And so these are actually, so there is at least a conjectural formula for irregular residues. So now we want, so basically what I'm saying that if I pick the eigenvalues of the residues to be pairwise distinct, I get the regular matrix. And then there is a conjecture for these polynomials, which is along, it generalizes, again, previous results obtained by Hauser and Rodriguez-Viegas and Hauser-Letelier and Rodriguez-Viegas. So the way this is set up, you first have two sides of this. You have a formula for the some generating function for these polynomials. You construct this combinatorial object, which I call ZHMW, which is basically a sum over Young diagrams or partitions. So for each Young diagram, you have a rational function of two variables, Z and W, which is written right here. You have that the rational function, and then these H twiddles are actually the H McDonald polynomials. So this is going to be on the next slide. So the H twiddles are the X, the H McDonald, the modified McDonald polynomials, which occur actually in Heyman's work. They admit a geometric interpretation in terms of the Hilbert schema points on C2. So now we define. A priori, what you think you're defining is just some rational function I call script H, H mu n, by this formula. I'm missing an exponential. I'm sorry. So you have to put the right hand side of this formula into under an exponential. So I get an exponential here. That's actually very important, of course. Apologize. It's missing on the slides. So inside what I wrote here, it has to be the argument of an exponential function. Or if you want to put the log on the other side, maybe it's easier. So then you define this a priori, you think you're defining some rational function. Well, in fact, it turns out they are polynomials. And the conjecture, HMW conjecture, is that in fact, they compute the weighted Poincaré polynomial of the character varieties for regular, sufficiently generic regular residue. But this means that you are actually picking up only the H's in this formula, which correspond to a partition of the form 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, R times, which is natural because we want R to be regular. And as I said, this is a theorem for the if you specialize at v equals 1 or minus 1, it's a theorem, then it's proven. So you get a formula for the E polynomials of character varieties, and that's proven by counting rational points on the character variety. That was proven by Tamash and collaborator for the E polynomial. Now, I should say that for other partitions here, if you look at the formula, produces polynomial functions for other partitions as well. So you might wonder, are these polynomial functions related in any way to weighted Poincaré polynomials or character varieties with more general R, like a generic semi-simple R, not necessarily regular? And the answer to that ends up being no. It's a very strange situation. These are polynomial functions, and they do have an enumerative interpretation, but they don't give you the answer for the character varieties with more general residue. And it actually took us a long time to understand why and what happens. But anyway, the answer is no, it's not the right thing. So the question would be, how can we find the formula for the weighted Poincaré polynomials of more general character? Yeah, so where went? Oh, no, it went. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. It's not responding. No, it's just going. Okay, let me see. I'm going. Where am I supposed to go? R? R is just a diagonal matrix. R by R diagonal matrix. It's the residue of the connection at the. At the.
DQ plus R in the Z?
Well, I said I was missing a dz, of course.
R dz is q regular semi-simple, or R is supposed to be the centralizer of Q.
Okay.
So how generic is Q? Does Q have to have distinct eigenvalues, or?
Well, it depends. In Tomasz's work, I don't know. Maybe Tomasz can answer.
I think Tomasz's work has distinct eigenvalues, so that means that R has to be the maximum for it. And it doesn't make sense to talk about it being regular or not, because it's basically just,
okay, but you don't necessarily need to be. Yes, but I want to look at character varieties where R is allowed to be a semi-simple element in that maximal.
That's very strange condition. Those eigenvalues don't touch each other. They're split apart by Q. Unless you've got a Q which has repeated eigenvalues.
I'm willing to take Q whatever it has to be in order to allow for this to happen. I'm not.
Okay, so it's more general than the conjecture that they looked at.
Well, what I meant, what I meant to say here is just the, to just review their conjecture. So in this, here I'm just reviewing their results.
Right, so I have the definition of R.
R is just a diagonal matrix with pairwise distinct eigenvalues.
And it's the formal monogery or the formal residue as in the regular pole, and I have no other poles, or I have other poles as well.
Well, in this case, I'm assuming no other poles. You could allow other poles, and then you can generalize this, but I just confine myself to one singular point, just for simplicity, because otherwise the formulas are getting too wild here.
I really don't see how the space depends on whether or not those eigenvalues are equal. Maybe we should discuss afterwards. I don't know.
You're saying this is not, this is independent on.
If you take the Q to be regular semi-simple, then it's.
If you take Q to be regular.
Which is what they do.
Okay. Fine. Yes. Yeah. No. Fine. If you take the Q, that's fine. That's what they do. But the formula they use produces some H mu's that.
Depends on the differences between
eigenvalues. That it depends. Well, okay. So this is a combinatorial formula. This is a combinatorial formula. As you can see, you're just writing a combinatorial formula. So it's going to spit out some polynomials for any mu. Okay. Now for mu of the form 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, you have this.
So what is mu?
In this formula, mu is just a Young diagram. This is a.
What does it have to do with R or Q?
Well, it has to do with R because, in this particular case, mu in, four mu of this type is just the multiplicities of the eigenvalues of R, because
okay.
R is regular.
So you're saying that the topology of the wild character does depend on whether or not those eigenvalues are equal. Okay, that's quite.
No, you're just saying this formula is proof for.
So far, I haven't said anything. I'm just saying.
Can there be another formula?
You're telling me, okay, you're telling me that I need to take Q to be a regular semi-simple.
No, I'm saying that that's what the basis.
Fine, that's fine. Well, what if I don't?
Then you get these blocks and look at the orbits in those blocks. And that's a perfectly fine thing to do, and so.
That's what I'm doing.
That's not what they do, though, and you're reviewing their results.
Again, that formula is that formula. He's asking if there is another formula for another situation.
No, he wasn't, though. He was reviewing their results. Whatever he wants to do, I just would like a clear statement.
He wasn't generalized.
So what the statement did.
Yes, but I was going to say, look. Dear, what I'm saying is, well, you want Q to be regular semi-simple, that's fine. I have no trouble with that.
It's not what I want. What do you want?
All I want is to generalize this result.
Non-regular Q
and non-regular R. Yes. And I'm saying that you might think, because the formula gives you something for a general partition here, mu. But you might think that that's what it is. That's the answer, but it's not.
That's the partition which is the nil posted part of R?
No, it's the the multiplicity of eigenvalues of R.
Okay.
Well, in this formula, you can forget about geometry. This is a combinatorial identity or conjecture.
Right, but we won't understand it unless you tell us what.
Well, that's why that was the starting point of this work was to understand this. But so Tomasz understood what this H is for R for a partition of the form 1, 1, 1, 1, right?
So is that saying that R has distinct eigenvalues?
Yes, yes, it does. It has distinct eigenvalues. Okay, so you're telling me if I take a semi-simple cube.
Take a regular semi-simple.
No, I'm not taking a regular semi-simple cube. I want to take a semi-simple cube.
Okay, in which case it will in each block, for sure.
So then the topology won't depend on that.
It will if you do not have a regular cube. So that's actually the part.
No, I'm so.
Cube in it. That would make more sense.
Ah, okay, so you don't like the way I said it. Fine, okay.
Well, I just want to understand what you're saying.
Okay. Fine, yeah, okay. Okay, so fine. So in this formula, Q is regular semi-simple. And R is regular semi-simple too. So, is that okay? I'm just saying, is this okay? Then I want to ask the question, what happens if Q is not regular semi-simple and R is not regular semi-simple? In fact, this is going to happen simultaneously in string theory. It's not going to be like I can tune one and not the other. Okay, so now there is another conjecture of Shendet, Truman, and Zaslow, which relates the same kind of polynomials to not invariant. And this, in a nutshell, it goes something like this. So suppose I have a reduced rational. I don't know why rational. I don't think I need rational. It's a reduced plane curve with one singular point nu in the plane. And you look at the projection to one of the coordinate axes. And then you want to think of this projection as you want to think of this curve sigma as a spectral, essentially a spectral curve for a meromorphic Hitchin system on P1 with a pole at infinity. And then by Wild-Abelian Hodge correspondence, you get some kind of character variety associated to that. And then what Shendet, Truman, and Zaslow conjecture is that the weighted Poincaré polynomial of this character variety is related to a certain to the leading term in the Humphrey polynomial of the link of the singular point nu. Okay, so this is their conjecture, is that you have an identification like this. Actually, no, it's not really, it's the E polynomial because it's specialized at -1. And this is only supposed to be true for a very specific normalization of the Humphrey polynomial, which I'm not going to get into. It's not the usual standard in normalization in knot theory. I should also say that this is somehow, if you look at the non-abelian Hodge mirror of this statement, which is, if you look at sort of on the Higgs side, what this is related to is the Obronkov-Shendet conjecture, which identifies the same term in the Humphrey polynomial to a generating series of the Euler characteristic for the punctual Hilbert scheme of the singular point, of the curve at the singular point. And these conjectures have a refined generalization, which was formulated by Obronkov, Rasmussen, and Shendet, involving Kovanov-Grozensky invariants of the link. And then there is a refined color generalization, which was actually formulated by Zheng Hui, Jan Soebelman, and myself, using stable pair theory of the Carnot-Fold, which will be used later in the talk. And finally, I should say that the unrefined color generalization is what's proven by Davesh-Maolek. So that's proven by Maolek. The refined statements are all conjectures. Okay, so now I'm going to switch gears. So that was kind of the introduction. Now, what I'm trying to get to. So now, pretty much the way I'm going to approach this is by looking at modularized space of Higgs bundles. So in string theory, we don't really have a direct access to character varieties. But we do have it's a very natural connection with Higgs bundles. So the kind of Higgs bundles I want to look at now are, well, this is the moduli problem I'm going to consider. So again, I have a curve with a single mark point. I have an integer n, positive integer. D is n times p, is the non-reduced divisor n times p, and m is the canonical of the curve twisted by d. And then what I'm going to fix is, first I'm going to fix L sections of this bundle M restricted to D. So basically what you have is, you look at, this is the tallest space of M over the curve. This is my point B. Now I have a fat point of order N here. I have a fat fiber here over the fat point. So I take L sections of this coefficient line bundle over the fat point. So these are kind of, if you want, germs of sections, nth order germs of sections at p. So that's the data I want to fix. So then I'm going to introduce something called an irregular, well, we can call it a parabolic Higgs bundle, which consists of the following data. So first you have a vector bundle on C. You have a Higgs field, of course, with coefficients in M, in the twisted cotangent. We want a filtration of E over the fat point, over the nth order point, a filtration by locally free submodules such that each successive quotient is also locally free. And I'm going to, of course, naturally require that the Higgs field preserve the filtration. And this is where, so once you say that, then, and this is where this data comes in, and then the gradeds of phi, once you say preserve the filtration, you have the graded maps. The graded maps are essentially scalars. So that's what I'm going to use this section for, to fix the graded part of the Higgs field over the fat point, over the nth order point. And then, of course, I need some parabolic weights. As you know, in all parabolic problems, I need some parabolic weights. And there's going to be some natural notion of parabolic stability condition, which goes back to Maruyama and Yokogawa. And that's going to give you some modulized stack of such objects, where, of course, we need to fix some discrete invariants. We fix the length of the lengths, I should say, of the successive quotients over the fat point, the degree and the rank, and no, the rank is already determined, and the degree of D. And of course, for generic weights, the usual story applies. The generic weights, there are no semi-stables. You get some C star gerb over smooth course modulized space and quasi-projected. And similar objects were studied in the context of Riemann-Hilbert correspondence by Inaba and Saito, but not quite the same. So I don't really know a detailed comparison, but it's certainly the same, has the same kind of objects have been used in a similar context. So now the reason it's kind of funny, because the way we arrived at this is because it took us a long time to understand how this precise moduli problem is the one that I can fit in string theory in a natural way. Okay, so the way this goes, okay, so maybe I should say before I get into, into those details, you see what I'm going to do? Eventually, I'm going to apply non-abelian hash correspondence to these guys. So I think that's actually in agreement with what Philip was saying, because once I fix the graded to be this, then the Q is no longer regular, right? Because that's happened.
I mean, the basic question I have is whether this moduli problem matches up with the moduli problem I was speaking of. We know how to prove matches up.
Yes, that's what we claim. It matches up, yeah.
Because
it's
normally stated slightly differently, and this statement seems to be closer to this in
Arbor and Plato. It's closer, but we claim it does match.
One needs to check.
Yeah, it has to be checked, but we claim it does. And the fact that you have this condition here on phi gives you a semi-simple Q that's not regular. It has blocks. All right, so that's the way. Anyway, but the point is, Okay, so now the way you embed this in string theory is using a spectral construction. And the first goal, the first step in this, I mean, the main step is to come up with some holomorphic symplectic surface S, which is going to depend on all the data. I've just kept track of the section psi, C, and all the other data is implicit, in such a way that the moduli stack of semi-stable irregular Higgs bundles we just constructed is identified with the moduli stack of Bridgeland stable dimension one sheaves on the surface. So the idea uses a construction of actually of Kontsevich and Soibelman. They construct such a symplectic surface in such a way that the Hitchin base for this moduli space, for this moduli problem, Higgs bundle moduli problem, is identified with a certain linear system on S psi, as it should be by spectral correspondence. And then there is a result of Zabov, who actually proves the isomorphism over certain open subsets, so essentially proves some birational equivalence. But we really, for the kind of problems we're asking, we really need the full, I mean, we need a global isomorphism. And how this goes, well, what you're doing is you first blow up the images of the sections over the fat points. So these are some, you have some non-reduced schemes here. So you get some non-reduced subschemes, zero-dimensional subschemes of the total space. You blow them up on the total space, and in plain language, what this means is that you do successive blow-ups at each. You do some successive blow-ups of the total space of M. Which is sketched here. You get the chains like this of exceptional curves by successive blow-ups. So you get L such chains of N exceptional curves each on this surface. Now you get a surface, this is not going to be holomorphic symplectic. It has a non-trivial canonical class, but it's what you can do is you can check that the minus k is effective, and you can remove an anti-canonical divisor in such a way that you are left with a holomorphic symplectic surface. And I'm not going to write the formula of which anti-canonical I want to remove, but the effect of that is that I'm going to remove from each chain, I'm going to remove the first n minus one components. I'm going to be left only with the tail of the chain, which is going to be non-compact then, and I'm going to remove the fiber here. So you get, in this way, you get a holomorphic symplectic surface. And then the statement is that there are some natural geometric there is some natural geometric structure that naturally exists on the surface. So for any collection of integers like this, M1 up to ML, non-negative, you can find a linear system of X psi consisting of compact divisors, which are finite covers of C. Okay, so they are finite to 1 to C. This is, of course, an open linear system because we don't want to look at bad degenerations. Then there is a compactly supported B field, which is basically an element of H2 with compact support, in such a way that it evaluates in a. You can tune them. You can evaluate on each divisor like this, and you have some free moduli, free parameters you can tune there. And then using this data, you can come up with a very natural notion of beta stability for dimension one sheaves, which is really very mild Bridgeland stability. It's the usual stability, which is Simpson stability, twisted a little bit by beta. And you come up with a moduli problem for dimension one sheaves. You fix the first chain class to be an element of this linear system, and of course the Euler character. So that gives you a moduli stack of such objects. It gives you a moduli stack of such objects. And then the main claim, one of the main things we actually prove in the paper is that there is a spectral correspondence statement, which really is an isomorphism of stacks. Again, I'm missing the semi-stable here. I really need semi-stable there, not the whole stack. It's an isomorphism of stacks between this pure dimension one sheaves with compact support on the holomorphic symplectic surface and the moduli stack of semi-stable Higgs bundles that we constructed. And the identification So as you see, the discrete invariants of the flag correspond to the same to the discrete invariants of the first chain class of the sheaf F. There is a shift of the degree here, but that's not it's not a problem. And the parabolic weights get identified to this B field parameters on the three, on the surface. So there's some natural construction like this. And this actually holds. I mean, for this, I don't need any specific conditions. I mean, I can take any genus, a curve of any genus, any number of singular points, and you get an isomorphism like this. I mean, you can easily kind of see what happens, as in all these problems, once you have a surface that's like this. Well, we already removed that, but let me. What you do is you take the sheaves and you pull them, push them forward. To see, and then you have to carefully check that you get the exact kind of objects we defined before, the kind of Higgs bundles. And then you can invert the construction using essentially a monad construction. Again, it's a little bit delicate, but it can be checked in a certain number of steps. So that actually allows us to move from the curve to some objects on the surface. The important thing about this construction, the very important thing is that down on the curve, I had to actually choose a I have to choose by pen the parabolic structure. Once I'm on the surface, the parabolic structure, it comes naturally. I mean, there is no, as you see, there is no choice of parabolic structure in this. It is just natural moduli problem for dimension one sheaves on the surface. I don't have to choose parabolic structures along divisors or anything like that. So that's what makes this description, this presentation of the moduli spaces, incarnation of the moduli space, amenable to actually embedding in string theory in a natural way.
So we use cis-direction on this.
Well, for higher genus curves, I'm not going to have any cis-direction on the surface. Because if this is higher genus, you see, I have to pick some random points on this fiber, so I just don't have a cis-direction at all. That's why you're kind of anticipating what I'm going to say next. Eventually, every explicit computation I can do is going to be on a rational curve. Oh, it's going to be for a rational curve with a single mark point. Because then I do have a cis-direction, which is actually you can use to great effect.
Cis-direction
which
scales the symplectic form?
It's going to scale the symplectic form, but eventually, because everything is about threefold, you're gonna take the total space of the canonical class, the canonical line bundle of this surface, which is of course trivial, but then you can further leave the cis-direction to this total space in such a way that it scales the holomorphic three form with weight zero. So then you are in business. Indeed, if you scale the holomorphic two form, that's not so good, but once you leave to the threefold, no, I mean, for enumerative purposes, but once you leave to the threefold, then many things get very nice when you have an action like this. Okay.
Well, the condition that we're gets there automatically. Okay.
There is a non-zero, no way of vanishing to zero form.
Yeah.
Okay, it's holomorphic to zero form because I removed. Normally, I mean, on the blow-up, you have a meromorphic to zero form,
yeah.
And I just removed the divisor of poles. Yeah. So I excise it. So okay. All right. So. All right, so that's the next step is that once I'm on the surface, that's this correspondence. Now, so we have to kind of, as I said, we anticipated. What I want to do is actually think about Calabi-Yau threefolds and Donaldson-Thomas invariants, because sort of that's the natural type of counting problem that occurs in string theory and has a natural string theoretic interpretation. So this is actually, well, as I wrote it, it's cross A1, but this is what is really meant to be the total space of the canonical, which is indeed isomorphic to A1, but it's probably better to think about it as the total space of the canonical. And then you can prove that if you look at, you can formulate a moduli problem for dimension one sheaves on the threefold, and as long as you only work with stable objects, not including semi-stables, you can prove that the moduli stack here is just a product like this. So somehow the stable objects just can only be translate trivially along the A1 direction and nothing else happens. So you get a product structure like this for the moduli stack on the threefold, which is not hard to prove, but it's also very important. And that doesn't work for semi-stable. So it's It's really just for stable objects, which is not such a problem because we can always make the parabolic waves generic and we don't have to worry about semi-stables. All right, so now once I'm in this setup, I'm gonna kind of change gears and I wanna think about stable, so enumerative invariants, curve counting invariants in a rather refined way. So the flavor of curve counting theory, which is the most natural in this particular problem, is the stable pair theory constructed by Pendergrand and Thomas. And what you do is that you define some integer invariants as virtual numbers of pairs consisting of a pure dimension one sheaf F with a section S, which is generically surjective. And of course, on their theory is very general. It works. It's really originally formulated on a projective, on a compact threefold. But in this case, because I'm a non-compact, I have to add some conditions. Like I don't make sure that this has compact support. And of course, when I fix the numerical, the topological invariants, I'm going to fix them to be of this form in this linear system that I mentioned before. I'm sorry. What?
I mean, it's quite.
That's right. So these are sheaves on the threefold now, and I want them to have compact support on the threefold. No, I mean, I'm not aware of any kind of theory that, because if you allow them to have non-compact threefold support, then you probably have to use some framing data or at infinity or I don't know what. But the problem is I don't want to think about that. I really want compact support. Dimension one, yeah. Well, we'll see examples. The simplest and nicest examples are the torus invariant curves. I'm going to show you that. That's the best, the nicest examples. We can construct many, but I mean, you basically construct examples by starting out with a section of in here. You start out with some section in here. You make sure it only touches the fiber at this point, and then once you blow up, you take the strict transform and you get a compact curve. That's the generic example. But then you'll see nice examples when you look at torus invariance curves. And then on the threefold, I also want it to be compact. I mean,
on the first line, there do you multiply the pi or the
pi? Yes, I apologize. This is why. Yeah, I have a bunch of. Yeah, here I really mean y. Yes, this is supposed to be read as y, not s. Yeah, because that's why you get this extra direction in the moduli space, which is translation along the non-compact direction. So this is stable pair theory. This counts such pairs. Then we need something, in fact, more, which follows. It's really, again, there's this very general theory of Kontsevich and Seubermann about motivic Donaldson Thomas invariants, which is it's a huge subject. It's very general theory, but if you apply it to this situation and you take the motivic invariants and you specialize them to polynomial invariants, you'll get something that is called in physics refined invariants or refined stable pair theory, in which instead of getting virtual numbers of objects, you get virtual Poincaré polynomials of moduli spaces of such object. Now you have to be a bit. This word virtual is very, very loaded here because it's not the usual virtual Poincaré polynomial of the moduli space. It's virtual in two directions, but I don't know if I have time to explain it because you first construct a virtual motive and then you take the virtual Poincaré polynomial. But anyway, there is some this theory that gives you produces for you some invariants that generalize the numbers to polynomials. And you make a generating function, and then, you might wonder why. Well, you'll see a bit later why. How is this related to the original problem? But you get a generating function, and now the first goal is to try to compute it for this particular threefold. which is not very simple. And as Tomasz was anticipated, what happens is that on a general curve, Hyagenes curve, you don't really have, if you use this construction, this surface based on the data we have, we don't have any torus action. But what you can do, of course, is you can restrict yourself to the case when C is just P1 with a single mark point. And then we have a natural torus action on P1. And you lift it up to the surface, to the first of all, to the total space of M. So you lift it up in such a way that, so you're going to have a torus action here, in such a way that this line here is pointwise fixed. So you want this line, the whole line here, to be pointwise fixed. So this is a fixed line. Okay? Because I want to allow myself to pick up a random collection of points there. So I want them to be preserved by the torus action. So this has to be fixed. OK, so that's the story. So from now on, everything I say will apply to P1 with my point. You have this torus action. Once you have this action, then you can easily check that it propagates to the blow up. So you eventually get a torus action on the holomorphic symplectic surface. And the further lift to the, as we just already discussed, to the threefold. We already discussed that it leads to the threefold, and you what is natural to do in this kind of situation is try to use some kind of refined virtual localization for stable pairs. On the A1 direction, it has some. You can work out the weight easily. It's not trivial. It's very important because you see what's happening as we just discussed that. So on the surface, the holomorphic, the two form is not. Is not preserved. I mean, it acts with a non-zero weight, but you lift it here in such a way that it acts with zero weight on the holomorphic free form. That's the issue. And you can use refined virtual. Try to use refined virtual localization. There are. This was for stable pair. For this refined invariant was developed by Nekrasov, Okunkov, and also by Maulik independently. Indeed, as I'll show you in a minute, the stable pair theory does localize on a finite collection of rational curves in the surface, but still direct localization computations are extremely hard. I mean, it's not, it's really a hard problem. The fixed point set in the holomorphic symplectic, yeah, I'll show you the fixed point set, yeah. So the fixed point set is going to be just points. Just a finite set of points. So this is the picture on the surface. But you have to keep in mind that we throw away some divisors here. I mean, we throw away basically everything you see here except for the tails, for this last tails of the chains. And that's what we work with. So what's happening is that you're gonna get a fixed point at the end of each tail here. So you're gonna have fixed points here, here, and here, finitely many. And you have another one which sits on the zero section here, over the infinity point in P1. Okay, so this is the point P where I have the singularities here. This is over infinity on P1. And so the fixed point set on the surface is actually finite. And the invariant curves. Yeah, but I threw that away. I'm removing the anti-canonical in such a way that I'm left with the holomorphic symplectic surface. Yeah. On it wouldn't be. Yeah, you're right. Of course, it wouldn't be on the whole blow up. It wouldn't be. Okay. So, and now if you look at the torus invariant curves, you have this. Well, probably it's hard to see. These are some. The structure of this torus invariant divisor. In an affine neighborhood of O, it looks like something like this. It's a collection of, curves of this form, y equals lambda x to the some power, which are all tangent to the zero section at the same point. So somehow what you want to do is the whole stable pair theory is going to localize on this collection of divisors, which are tangent to the zero section and to each other at the same point. And actually, this higher tangency point makes the calculation pretty hard. I mean, it's really a hard calculation. At least it's hard to do It's a very hard calculation to do if you don't know the answer beforehand. So what we did, of course, because I physicists are allowed to cheat, actually. So I'm not going to do computation, of course. Physicists don't do computations; they're allowed to cheat. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to just observe that we are actually in this framework of Oblomkov and Shende, because this curve that I had there, this blue curve that I had there, what you get here is some kind of a plane curve singularity with several branches at O, right? So in that case, you just think, well, you're back to Oblomkov-Shende. So what that tells you is that the refined invariance of this, the refined invariance localized on these singular plane curves are related, supposed to be related to refined invariance of torus links of this form. And this is, you can read this all from that collection of curves. Okay, so now we really need a kind of the most general formulation of this conjecture, which makes a statement for colored refined invariance. The colors basically are partitions associated with each of those components. So we had these curves here. So you have to allow them to be labeled by partitions, mu1, mu2, and so on, arbitrary partitions. And what happens once you realize that, of course, this is not yet, it's not a very easy problem, because if you go and look through the knot theory literature, you're not going to find closed formulas for invariants like this. But what you can do is that you can use this machinery of refined Chern-Simons theory developed by Aganagic and Shakirov, and also some further work of Shakirov and some tricks from Lagrangian duality. And with all that, we put together and we come up with some explicit formula for the stable pair theory, conjectural formula for the stable pair theory for this situation. So now this is, I say it in a few words, but this is a lot of work to actually get to the bottom of it. So this is the formula. Yeah, I say it's a conjecture. So this is my full formula for the stable pair theory. It's product of factors. Each factor is associated to one of these, as you expect, one of these torus invariant rational curves. So what's made of? It's made of, well, you see, for each curve you have this. These are the P. MacDonald polynomials evaluated as some specific values of the argument. I'll show you in a minute. And they are kind of glued together, if you want, by fusion rules. I mean, this quantity W twiddle is the one that glues together all the components, and it's really glued by fusion rules. Because the ends here, what you see here, the ends are just the ST, Littlewood, Richardson coefficient. Unfortunately, I can't put everything on one slide. So let me see, I had the explanation here. So what we get is the P lambdas are the PS MacDonald polynomials. You want to evaluate them at values of the argument of this form. So you have an infinite set of formal variables, but you specialize as values of this form. These are basically the fusion coefficients for MacDonald polynomials. The n's, they depend on S and T, although I did not make the dependence explicit there. And then you have some framing factors that show up. They are important. They are rather simple, but they are important. So this is the formula for the stable pair theory, conjectural formula for the stable pair theory of Y. It's pretty complicated. Yeah. You have to be on the threefold for this machinery to work. But you see, eventually you localize yourself on the surface. The kind of threefold has to be there in the background to make sure that all the Jahn's machinery is fine, and then. Eventually, you kind of localize yourself to something simpler. No, this is not going. So this is the formula. So now, how is this related to what I wanted to do? Okay, so that's the first question. So there is this, I would think, even magical formula called the refined Gopakumar-Vafa expansion. As the name says, it goes back to the work of Gopakumar and Vafa. It was in the meantime refined by Iqbal, Koskaz, and Vafa, and there is a fair amount of math literature about this. So the statement is the following. you take this formula, this stable pair generating function we just conjecturally computed, and it's according to this formula, it's supposed to have an expansion of this form here, which you see it's rather similar to the kind of expansions we saw in the formula of Tomasz and collaborators. So what you get here, this time I didn't forget the exponential. So what you get here is, well, it's what's written. These are the monomial symmetric functions, mu. The formula is not. I'm sorry. The formula is not complete. I mean, I didn't forget the exponential, but I forgot the other things that were more important. To make the formula correct, this mu is not just one partition. It's the whole collection of partitions. And then n mu is just the product of m mu I, and then the formula is fine. So mu, it really should be the whole collection of partitions. M mu is the product of all mu I, and these are another. So the statement is that the refined pair, stable pair theory has an expansion of this form, and furthermore, these quantities here, which a priori are rational functions, are in fact polynomials. And furthermore, there is a second statement which it's telling us that they are supposed to be identified. They are supposed to be just equal to the perverse Poincaré polynomials of the Higgs bundle moduli spaces. This statement as written here, this would work for a general curve, but for a general curve, you would have no idea what this is. I mean, only in a very abstract way, but not concretely. These formulas like this are supposed to work in a fair amount of generality. They are not specialized to any kind of local quasi-projective threefolds or anything. So it's a long story how it's supposed to work in general. But in this particular example, what I expect is an expansion like this. No, I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm taking it back. No, this is supposed to be just one partition. I got confused. I'm sorry. There is no such thing here. It's just I got confused between the two sides. You get the sum over mu one mu l here. This is just one partition. It's evaluated at Q1 QL variables. Okay. This formula is in fact correct. So this is mu. So now mu, what is mu? Mu is the partition determined by the numerical invariance of the flag that you choose in the moduli problem. And this formula tells you that, well, predicts that this formula should determine all the perverse Poincaré polynomials of this moduli spaces. And then now we have a further claim, which now we claim that, in fact, using non-abelian Hodge correspondence, these moduli spaces end up being actually identified in that sense with wild character varieties with a semi-simple Q and a semi-simple R, but not regular, none of them. Okay, so that's the statement here. So for C1, for one marked point, you get the final conjecture, you get an identification. The claim is that there is the weighted Poincaré polynomial of such character varieties are given by the P's that we computed from that complicated formula. Why would you even believe this would be true? I mean, what I can tell you, this is my last slide actually. What I can tell you is that what we can check is that we can check that this agrees with the HMW formula in many rank 2 and 3 examples we checked. So you just make R and Q regular, and then you can check that the numbers match. Although the formulas a priori don't match. But the number, the polynomials that you get from there, they match. You get predictions for more generic, for all partitions, What we managed to check with a lot of effort, actually, is that the specialization of these polynomials at u equals 1, the perverse variable equals 1, does agree with the Poincaré polynomial of the Higgs bundle moduli space computed by direct localization. So this is a direct computational check. We just computed these Poincaré polynomials by localization, and they match the specialization of this polynomial. The way I set it up, I want this to be really the Poincaré polynomial. Just the Poincaré. I'm turning off the perverse. Genus zero, yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, what we did was just computed them. By
what was
POV
for you?
POV is for me is the... up to some signs I might forget. It's u to the I v to the j at the dimension of graded p I h j. So I want to turn off the perverse variable, and then I'm left with Poincaré polynomial, and that I can just compute by brute force, which is not, again, it's not an easy computation, but that's quite, it makes it more non-trivial check. And then maybe I'll just end here with a question. Can actually one try to prove the other specialization by setting V to 1 by, well, essentially counting rational points? So that's a question that comes very natural to mind. All I can say is that I know nothing about counting rational points. I tried to set up a very naive computer program to check this by explicit computations, and computer crashed, so I was trying to work over the field with 9 elements, and the computer just totally gave up. So I don't know, maybe but this is from somebody who knows nothing about this, so anyway, so I'll stop here. Yeah, so Gopal Kumar Bafa, let me see. Why they appear? The reason why they appear, well, all the physicists in the audience know why they appear. The physical explanation. Fine. It's just that you look at the moduli space of Higgs bundles. So you have this map, right? So you have Higgs bundles, which are Higgs bundles, which has a map, the Hitchin map to some base, which is in a linear space, actually, a vector space in this case. But then what happens is that you can think of this as the 2 to 0 bound state, right? In type 2A. And then you imagine going to M theory. So by going to M theory, you lose the gauge field. Now, what this means in terms of this map is that, well, the fibers of this map really encode the gauge field data on the D-brain. And now what Gopal Kumar Bafa argued, they argued that if you look at, so now if you lift to M theory, so now we take the M theory lift. So then in M theory, you have a little group, which is SU2 left cross SU2R, SU2 right. Right, you are in 5 dimensions. Well, cross collabial, but you're in the non-compact 5 dimensions. You have a little group like this. And now what they argued is that, when you translate in this setup, what they say is that one spin quantum, so you have a J3 left and a J3 right. So what they said is that J3, it depends how your conventions, but let's say J3 left, it acts here by multiplication by the relative, Keller form. So then one of them is that, and the other one is essentially just the cohomological degree. So that makes the connection between the spin quantum numbers and the 2 degrees. So you have the cohomological degree, and then you have this more subtle. Well, the more subtle thing is that you look at this is a vibration by the fibers are compact, all right? Well, they degenerate. There is actually a abelian variety, so they have a polarization, a Keller form. So you can use that Keller form to construct a Lipschitz type action on cohomology. In addition to the, yeah. That's the. Oh, but that comes again from the work of Tamash. If you look at the connection between the perverse filtration and this additional SL2 action, I think you have to use what's called the hard Lipschitz or the relative hard Lipschitz theorem to understand the, yeah. Yes. Right, so that was here. Here. So these are the P. MacDonald polynomials. This S is just S to the 1/2, S to the 3/2, and so on. These guys, these were the framing factors. F mu is just the product of S to the A, P to the minus L. And the W's are what glues this everything together. They're obtained, but it's really the fusion rules here. I mean, you get the successive fusion product between MacDonald polynomials. These are, and the N's are the ST little Richardson coefficient. So these W's are really the thing that glue things together. Well, no, I can't prove that I don't think it's true. I don't think this side of the equation is not equal to the one used in that conjecture. It's not the same. It's a very strange situation. I don't know any concrete relation between this Z and the Z you use in that construction, or genus zero, of course. What happens is very funny. What happens when you actually compute the P's end up being equal between the two formulas only for mu of the type mu equals 1, 1, 1, 1. Then the P's agree. The P's agree. Now, for mu of different mu's, the P's don't no longer agree. So it's like, you're moving that in a different direction. And I actually understand why, but I really don't want to go over time. So I can tell you what's going on. Yeah, for P1 we might want one point. Yeah.
Questions.